Hello and welcome to Massive Match Day. I am here with Josh Malott. Chris Landis is not with us this week. He had other things to attend to, so it'd be him and I presenting this from Old North Arcade and Land Grant Brewing Company. Head out there in Franklinton, get some craft beer, head to the arcade. They have awesome, awesome stuff there. Last time I was in Columbus, I actually went to Old North Arcade, and I had one hell of a time, and they have amazing beer there, too, so check it out. For this week's episode of Massive Match Day, we are going to cover two matches against the Philadelphia Union. First one is going to come tonight against, in Columbus at 7:30, and then we have a return leg in Philadelphia on Wednesday at the same time. Josh, how are you this week?
I'm doing okay. Most importantly, the dog is put away, so she will not be chewing my computer today and ruining the podcast.
Don't want to have to do this one twice, even though it's going to feel like we're going to because we have two matches to cover against the same team. Josh, I'm going to ask you right out of the bat here. What do you think of this Philadelphia Union team? I mean, we have two matches, so we get to see a lot of them. I know you and I both got to see them play Wednesday. What do you think of this Philadelphia Union team this year?
Yeah, they're hard to get a read on. They've been relatively streaky, I guess. They really, really struggled at the beginning of the year. I think they went eight games without a win to start the season, and I'm pretty sure we're the last team in MLS to pick up their first win this season. So there were a lot of problems early on, and then it looked like maybe they had it figured out, and they went on a little streak of wins, and now more recently they've been kind of up and down. They've found some middle ground, I think. And it's not real clear. They're missing some guys for various reasons right now. And, they're some of their most important players. So, they're a very beatable team. I think it's one of those cases where they're not as bad as we thought they were early on. And then they're not as good as maybe they looked for about a month here, not too long ago.
Yeah. They did have that kind of incredible streak where they look like they could have been one of the top teams in MLS right after they had that slump where they had absolutely nothing going for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to figure out, did they figure something out and now they're dealing with international call-ups and stuff and rocking the boat a little bit and looking for some stable water, or was it just, the way things run sometimes? I mean, when you look across an entire season, every team has winning streaks and losing streaks. By the end of the season, we might look back at that month and say that was the best it got for Philly. And we may, see lesser performances the rest of the way. So, one thing to note is that, they have not been good on the road at all. Which we know it's very hard to win on the road. Their only win on the road this season has come against DC, and I think we have a pretty good sense for how bad DC is right now, so that's not saying a whole lot. This will be their third road game in a row. They've lost the last two, so from that standpoint, that's good news for Columbus, at least on Saturday.
Yeah, and I have to give a little bit of favor to Columbus, in the home leg, at least. I'm not sure how this one's going to go overall. It may be, two entirely different matches, but we'll get to see both sides. Do you think that these teams are going to play a little bit differently in both matches? Are you expecting much of the same for each game? Do you expect, the away team to be a little bit more passive, take less chances, and the home teams to kind of take the game and run away with it?
Well, I think from Philly's standpoint, I definitely think we'll see a little bit of a different approach. If you watch the game Wednesday night at Montreal, I thought they were pretty passive in that game. They ceded a lot of the possession. Looking at the stats at the end, it said that they had 10 shots, but only two of them were on frame. And to be quite honest with you, I don't remember 10 Philly shots in that game. It was definitely dominated by Montreal. And I think when you combine being on the road with some of the pieces that they're missing right now, I think it points certainly to a pretty conservative approach for Philly when they come to Montfrey. And when we turn it around midweek and look at the game out on the East Coast, you know, I don't, you know, Berhalter tends to take, I think, a similar approach home and away. There are some subtle tweaks, I think, but you're not going to ever see a team that's really going to sit back and bunker. You know, when we're talking about a conservative crew side, it's you know, shades of gray, I guess, on a scale there. But I do think that we'll see a more aggressive Philly at home. That said, they're missing some important guys. We don't. I'm assuming that regardless of how things go in the Gold Cup, that those guys won't be back by Wednesday. But I really don't know. I'm not sure exactly how the schedule sets up and how fast these guys get back. Sometimes you see guys come back and play in a game 2 days later. Other times guys take a week to get back into things. So I think that personnel and some Gold Cup results may dictate that a little bit for Philly come Wednesday. And it may also dictate who we see them put on the field this weekend. That, you know, they're looking at playing three games in a week. There's going to have to be some player rotation. When you look at them being shorthanded already, I'm not sure that they have a ton of depth there. That's definitely not a strength for them. So it'll be interesting to see if they maybe rotate some guys on Saturday in Columbus and kind of hedge their bets for Wednesday at home to throw a more, you know, first choice lineup out there as much as they can on Wednesday.
Yeah, and if you include their next match following the Crew doubleheader against New England, that'll be actually four matches in a week and a half for Philly. You have to imagine that for player fitness, they have to rotate in there. But you mentioned that they are without a few guys from the Gold Cup, so what depth do they have to rotate? I think that's a big question mark.
It's definitely a big question mark. I mean, this is not a team that you look at and look at their guys coming off the bench. And if I was a Philly fan, I would not feel real comfortable with that. I think they do have some depth at outside back. They have some options there, I think. That's a position they're okay at. We're talking about Keegan Rosenberry, a guy who was a Rookie of the Year type player last year and looked like he was going to be a fixture, and he hasn't even started a lot of games this year. He's kind of been a second choice guy there, so he's a guy that we'll probably see in one of those games at least. But outside of that, man, it's this is a team. I look at their lineup and I don't know. I really don't know where they're going to find answers. I'm not sure what Derek Jones' status is right now. He did not play against Montreal. Warren Cravall played in that defensive midfield role there.
Jones is still actually on the injury list.
Is he?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a big blow there because he was a young guy that was getting a lot of minutes at D-mid. I seriously don't – I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. When I look at this roster – I'm seeing guys that are either unavailable or guys that are playing, and there's not a whole hell of a lot else there.
Sure, yeah, and you know, for those listening at home, the guys that they are missing to the Gold Cup, of course, Alejandro Bedoya. He plays usually in the center mid, attacking mid, or holding mid for Philadelphia. He's with the U.S. men's national team, as is Chris Pontius. Pontius has been replaced by Roland Alberg out on the right-hand side, who's done well. I'd say he's had inconsistent performances. And then Andre Blank in goal has been replaced with John McCarthy, who Josh, I want to get your feel about John McCarthy here, but for a backup goalie, I'd say he's almost as good as Andre Blake.
I don't know if I would go that far. I'm real high on Andre Blake, and I think that's a major blow for him not to be there. But when you look at John McCarthy, he's a guy that's got a lot of experience for a young goalkeeper. When Philly was going through that period of stockpiling keepers and seemed like they had a different keeper every couple of weeks, McCarthy was a guy that stepped in for quite a while and started a lot of games for them and performed relatively well, all things considered, with kind of where that team was at the time. So I think he's a guy that is talented. He may be a little bit better than your average backup keeper in MLS. I do not think he's on the same level as Andre Blake, but he is experienced. And I think he's a guy that one day will be starting for someone regularly in this league. So, I mean, that certainly he helps there. That's an area where they do have some depth. And while I think Blake is a blow not to have him there, they do actually have some help there as opposed to some of these other spots. Also, I wanted to clarify, I'm pretty sure Bedoya is he actually was released from the U.S. team, but he's gone because his wife just gave birth.
That is
last week.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a guy. I'm not exactly sure what his status is because he's been out because of the birth for about a week now, and I don't know when they were eyeing him coming back. He is still listed as out on the report that I saw. I don't know whether that's really correct or not, but I would say there's at least a decent chance that he could be back for Wednesday because that's not really an injury thing. It's whenever they have it in their plans for him to come back from, I guess, technically paternity leave or whatever you want to call it.
Gotcha. Josh, what do you think about Harris Madungenin? I don't know if I said that right.
Madungenin,
right?
You turned this around on me because I was going to actually ask you about him because I'm pretty sure he was a guy that came up on your list when we were doing the mid-season awards. So I've watched him a little bit, and at times, especially very early in the season, I wasn't quite sure if he fit the role they were trying to use him in, but I definitely saw some ability there. What have you seen? Why do you like him? And what do you kind of expect from him?
Well, he is a terrific passer out of the back for Philadelphia. Philadelphia struggles a bit actually in transition. And they have for, I'd say a solid 2 years now, but ever since he was brought in, they have kind of transformed to this almost like kind of electric counterattacking team, even though it doesn't seem like they necessarily want to be that. He provides an opportunity for them. His left foot too is amazing. I think his stats on the year aren't like going to blow anybody away because he plays for the most part pretty deep. He has 2 goals and 4 assists on the year. And his passing statistics, you know, are good. They're not trap level good, but his, you have to factor in distance of passes, et cetera, you know, much further than say like a Will Trapp. But I kind of see him almost in the same role as, you know, Chicago has, Schweinsteiger. Honestly, I think Madunyanin is that type of creator. He's so good, at finding players, and every time he plays, every time I watch a Philadelphia game, I just keep my eyes on him. Almost like watching like Barcelona and Busquets or something like that. It's, you know, his little movements, everything he does on the ball and off the ball, I think are just so good. And no, he's not a name that a lot of people are going to talk about, but for me, he is like the most crucial point to this team.
What I find is interesting is when they do play him next to Bedoya in that deep midfield, because neither of those guys are really true defensive midfielders. Bedoya is kind of a box to box guy, and Madunyanin is more of like a deep lying playmaker guy. He's a string puller from deep into midfield. So they kind of lack that defensive shield in front of the back four. Which ironically, I mean, when they've been successful, it's been because they've been pretty solid defensively. But yeah, I mean, I think Madunyanin's numbers kind of play out those things that you're talking about. I mean, this is everything basically runs through him. When you look at his percentage of touches and how much the ball runs through him, he's a top 10 guy in MLS as far as just touches on the ball go. And his assist numbers might not be flashy, but when you look at key passes and chance creation, he has 43 key passes, which is actually tied for fourth in the league. And that's saying a lot, because
that's from
him
playing very deep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the other guys that are up there with him, Lee Wynn, Sasha Kljestan, Benny Fellhaber, Victor Vasquez, who I'm high on. I mean, David Villa, Nico Ladero, and then Federico Higuain. These are all guys that are attacking midfielders, and Madunyanin's doing that from a deep position. So I think those kind of play out exactly what you're talking about, which is a guy that's really critical in getting the ball where it needs to be in the attack.
Well, this is a perfect segue then to talk about Federico Higuain, because he is that guy for Columbus Crew. And we just found out today that he is not going to be playing tomorrow, which was total news to me. I didn't realize he had an injury. We still don't know, to clarify, what this injury is. The team has not released, as far as my knowledge goes. But, Josh, what does this mean then for Columbus against Philadelphia, not having that, you know, central creating outlet? How do they look to kind of replicate that creative force, and where do they attack this Philadelphia defense?
Well, I think we know the answer to that is Justin Miram, and it has to be. You know, we saw what they looked like without both of those guys on the field, and it wasn't pretty. You know, Justin should be pretty well rested at this point, I would think. With this break, and I don't believe he played in that friendly against Frankfurt. So he's a guy that should be raring to go, I would hope. And I think he becomes a guy. I don't know that they move him centrally necessarily. I don't know, since this was news to me. We talked about this before we started recording, that people wasn't playing. It's not like I've had a lot of time to kind of formulate what you do without him. But maybe it's an opportunity for them to try that three-man back line again and kind of play with that 3-4-2-1 that they've used, putting Miram in that two with either Kakuta Mane or Ethan Finley, something like that, where he's a little bit more central. You kind of eliminate that need for a true number 10, and obviously bolster some things defensively. So that's one option, I would think. But I think certainly everything has to run through Miram. And as far as attacking this back line goes, you know, I think, like we alluded to earlier, they, depending on how Philadelphia sets up, they don't necessarily have a lot of true defensive help from the midfield. I would expect them to play relatively conservatively on Saturday, and keep numbers behind the ball for the most part. So that's going to be tricky. But I think it's going to have to come down to off the ball movement and pulling the defenders kind of out of their shape, really is what it comes down to, because they're not going to necessarily have a lot of guys to help out there from defensive chops standpoint, but they may have numbers. And I mean, we've talked a million times about how Columbus has to try to break down a defensively bunkering team. I would expect that we'll see some of that on Saturday as well.
Yeah, from watching Philadelphia against Montreal on Wednesday. Philadelphia likes to engage in a little bit of a light press. They like to mark out a lot of the people in the back line. So it isn't necessarily a press on the man on the ball, playing out of the back as Columbus will like to do. But it's more so trying to cut passing lanes. And they seem to set up in this like 4-1-4-1 defensive shape. And I know Sapong was usually marking out the opposite side center back, letting one of the Montreal center backs really time on the ball, but trying to mark out all of his options in deep. And Philly seemed totally content with Montreal kind of sitting on the ball in the back. So if Columbus were to bring out a three-man back line, this could potentially help draw out Philly's defense a little bit, because then if you only have Sapong in Columbus's end trying to mark three players, that creates an opportunity then for Columbus for a lot of switches to, like you said, hopefully draw out this defense a little bit and try and open something up. So that could be used. And then if not, we could see Will Trapp trying to drop deep, trying to mismatch players a little bit. But from what I saw from Philly, from their defense, they do have some weak links that in marking that I think could be exploited by this team. I noticed Giolano, I forget his name, his first name, Wijnaldum, the younger brother of the Wijnaldum that plays for Liverpool. We'll go with that. But he plays left back for Philadelphia. And while technically he's very good on the ball, he's a good tackler, he's very, very passive in his approach. And honestly, both of Montreal's goals came from him not stepping up to his man, not taking him on, not closing him down, specifically on crosses and switches of play. And Montreal did this one movement where they brought Salazar, who's a right winger, internally to draw Wijnaldum to the center next to the center backs, and they had a lot of overlaps from their right back. So I think we could see a lot of use of Harrison Offal in this match, right, to try and get behind Wijnaldum here and try and swing a lot of crosses in. And if you're Greg Berhalter, maybe you set up for that, and that might be a method of approach for Columbus.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of that. I think it's worth noting that I do not think we will see Wijnaldum in both of these games. I think Fabinho has gotten more starts on the left side, has been their primary starter there, as he has been for 2 or 3 years now. So I think when you look at that being their deepest position and expected player rotation, I definitely think Wijnaldum could be a weak link there. I'm not sure we'll see him both games. Either way, I think that the approach still plays out, whether you're looking at Wijnaldum, Rosenberry, Fabinho, or Gattis. I would expect we will see some variations of those throughout the two games. But everything you said, I pretty much agree with, and I definitely think it's worth harping on that Philly press. Like you said, it's not an aggressive press, but they do press and they do have some success with it. You saw it against Montreal. They created an early opportunity for Fafa Pico off the press. I want to say the first 15 minutes or so, and then their only goal that Pico scored came off a giveaway in the back from Montreal. I mean, he jumped on a bad pass when he was staying high up the field there and walked it in. So that's definitely something that I think we should expect to see from the Union. And I mean, we've discussed plenty of times about how Columbus has or has not handled the high press so well throughout Berhalter's tenure. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Do you think that the three-man back line is a way of helping with dealing with the press, or do you think that it's better with the four-man back line?
I think so. I think it's just a little bit of it provides a little bit of a shield, I guess. I don't know if shield's the right word, but a comfort zone. And it should provide plenty of outlets, I would think, to handle that pressure a little bit better. Whereas, I mean, we've seen how they've struggled before. The short answer is yes. I think theoretically it would help.
Yeah, and as Josh said earlier, there's a very good chance we may see it in this match, especially with the absence of Federico Higuain. Josh, do you think Christian Martinez is going to start in goal for Columbus today?
I think he's going to start at all 11 positions, honestly. Ah,
there we go. the new Kevin Grosskreutz in Columbus.
By the end of the 90 minutes, he will have played at every position.
For those at home keeping track of how many Kevin Grosskreutz references I make in this podcast throughout the year, I think the number's at 4.
Which is 4 more than any other podcast in this country.
Very, very, very true. So we've talked last week about what we're expecting the league to kind of shape up for in the rest of the season. And right now, Philadelphia is, I believe, what are they, one spot down on Columbus
after the table? After Wednesday, they took a little bit of a hit, just the way that thing shook out. And they are currently, I just had it pulled up and now it's gone. They, I believe, are two spots back and 5 points back, if I'm not mistaken. Let me check this real quick. Yeah, they are. So Columbus is currently in 7th, just below the red line. Philly is in 9th on 23 points. Crew SC has 28 points. But Philly, for whatever it's worth, has one game in hand. So it's right now it's Orlando is sitting in the last playoff spot, and then Columbus, Montreal, Philadelphia.
So we have there's a potential for Philly to jump Columbus, right, with these two matches?
Yeah, two matches. I mean, you could easily have a 6-point swing, which theoretically head-to-head you're looking at a 12-point swing were the Union to win both games, which would leapfrog that would leapfrog them, and these are obviously very important games here. Is there a third game on the schedule against Philly at some point in the year? I don't have it in front of me. But either way, I mean, you're looking at the potential to really distance yourself between, another team that's right there, kind of in that same mix as you, looking at that last playoff spot.
Yeah, now there are only 2 matches against Philly this season. For what it's worth, Philly actually has a positive goal differential. Columbus does not. Columbus is -2. Philly is +3. Looking over at American Soccer Analysis, first off, shout out to you guys. Update your MLS tables. It's been like 2 weeks, and I was trying to look at them. It was failed. You guys are horrible. Just kidding. I love your site. So looking at Team XG goals for Philadelphia, they are actually kind of outperforming what they are expected to. With the goal differential for their expected, like -1.36. I know some of you people out there, this means nothing. But to me, what it says is that their players have been performing pretty clinically, right? We have Sapong up top, who's done really, really well this year. But I think it also remarks on Philly's style a little bit. They are a team that they don't get a ton of shots, and they don't allow a ton of shots. And what do you think that means for Columbus? Because Columbus likes to shoot a lot, and Columbus has a bit of a leaky defense. How does that match up against Philadelphia when it seems like it's two totally opposite teams facing each other?
Well, if you look at how it worked last year, it didn't work out too well for Columbus since Philly won all three games.
Right.
And I think that may kind of provide some insight into why that happened. It's an interesting matchup of styles that maybe hits Crew SC in kind of all the wrong places as far as where they're vulnerable. You know, I think we've seen that before with other matchups against teams that are just kind of stingy with the opportunities. You know, Columbus can't afford to waste their chances. What they get, they have to take advantage of, or there's going to be those opportunities where you make one or two mistakes in the back, which Crew SC is prone to do. And, you know, you walk out of there with a 2-1 loss or two, 1-0 loss, something like that. And that's, you know, that's certainly a possibility. You mentioned CJ Sapong. He's seemed like a very streaky player throughout his career. So many times where it seemed like he was going to be the second coming and he was going to be the next national team striker. And then, he wouldn't score for half a season. So
is he American?
That's a good question. He might not be. He might be. I don't know if he. No, he's. Well, he's listed as American on WhoScored.com.
Okay.
So he definitely has African background, but I think.
Yeah, and Owen Hargreaves is Canadian.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read. I don't know if you read that tweet exchange.
No, I did not.
That was entertaining. There was somebody claiming on Twitter that Canada is better than the U.S. at soccer because they have had a player that has played for Manchester United and the U.S. has not. Needless to say, this guy got destroyed by the Twitter community.
I hope that Tim Howard just tweeted at him with like a wavy hand emoji.
Yes, and the three other Americans that have played. there was one, it was, Giuseppe Rossi. Technically, he played for Italy, but he was born in New Jersey. So CJ Sapong was born in Manassas, Virginia. So unless he plays somewhere else, but I don't think so. Looks like potential for the U.S.
We'll see. I mean, he's been great this year. He's got 9 goals this season. But he's also been a guy, like I said, where he's had these streaks where everybody thought, okay, he's put it together, and then has kind of fizzled out. He's obviously carrying a heavy load with this team and has been. Fafa Picot has been, I guess, a nice addition this year, helped him out a little bit. But he, other than that, there's not a lot of guys taking, the scoring load off of him. So, he's a handful. He's certainly caused some problems for Columbus in the past. And he's a guy that's willing to kind of drop into the midfield a little bit. He's a guy that's willing to press a little bit. He's super athletic and
he's pacey.
He can get in behind as well. So, I mean, he's, on paper, he's the full package. He just has never put it together for any significantly long stretch of time. This half a season has probably been his best half a season or right up there, I guess. I don't recall exactly some of the numbers he put up in Kansas City, but he's dangerous. He's a dangerous player, and he's certainly a guy that Columbus will need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, do you think his pace would be a problem behind Harrison Offal? Offal has struggled this season, and I guess his entire time at Columbus at, marking out oppositions in transition. Do you think that could be an issue because Pico lines up on the left-hand side? That's the same side as Offal, and he has, the potential to get behind him. How does Columbus deal with that? Does a 3-man back line help cover that a little bit? Do you bring in a guy like Hector Jimenez? that's maybe a little bit more defensive aware than awful? Do you not see that really much of an issue in this one?
I don't know. I'd hesitate to say it's not a difference maker, because then I'm quite sure that it'll be exactly how Philadelphia scores a couple goals and wins 2-1. But I think the three-man back line, I think, addresses some of those issues. It just provides more cover back there and lessens the chances that someone that gets in behind is going to have the space that they need. It may be something where Hector is a guy that maybe you think about on the road, where you want to be just a tad bit more conservative and defensively aware. I think at home, I would like to see Harrison Offal and see Columbus really go for it. But on the road, that may be something that is worth thinking about as far as that side of the field. And you mentioned, Fafa Picot has a little bit of pace. Sapong can get in behind there. Whereas on the other side of the field, you don't have guys that are going to be breaking in behind the back line. You have guys that kind of want to be on the ball and finding that the space around the 18-yard box, really.
Yeah, guys he's mostly referring to, I assume, are Roland Alberg and Elsinho in the middle. And even Ray Gattis a bit. He doesn't get quite as high up the field. But, you know, the two aforementioned are both players that they like to play in the center. And I think against Montreal, they were kind of fighting over the number 10 role, I thought, a bit.
Yeah, I think that's something that they miss with Chris Pontius out, who, has really added a lot for Philly as a wide player. And he's really a true wide player. Whereas, you mentioned it when you look at Elsinho or Ilson Jr., as his jersey reads, and, him and, man, my mind just went blank, Roland Alberg.
Alberg.
Yeah. They both are very kind of similar types of players, and I think they want to play similar types of roles, whether it's kind of as an inverted winger or as a central kind of they're not really pure number 10s, but maybe kind of shadow strikers type deals. But I agree, those two guys, their skill set kind of overlaps a little bit. And I think that's something that Philly is missing with Pontius out, because Pontius gives you a real quality wide player that those two guys don't really fit that mold.
Yeah, and for Columbus, especially if they go with this three-man back line, having some of these guys in the midfield, you can kind of wonder, like, all right, how is Columbus going to tackle this midfield presence? I would think, with the likes of like Trapp and Archer, how do they mark out these players? How do they nullify them? And what's it going to be like in transition? I think are going to be big factors going into this one. Josh, what do you think? For these two matches, do you think Columbus grabs the win? Do you think Columbus struggles? Or is it totally different for home and away? What are you expecting score-wise?
Oh, time for the predictions. I feel good going into it. Maybe that's just because I've had a couple of weeks where there's nothing to be frustrated about because there haven't been games. So it's a little bit easier to say, hey, yeah, they're gonna do this. But it's just Philly. Philly's kind of – they don't look like a team that's really there yet. And I know with Ernie Stewart coming in before last year, they were – they were really looking at building for a few years down the road. They turned things around really quickly last year, and I think expectations may have been a little bit unfair entering this year. But I think they're a very beatable team right now. And when you look at the guys they're missing, which are arguably three of their top four or five players, that's a big blow. And that's an opportunity that Columbus needs to take advantage of. If Columbus can't beat a shorthanded Philadelphia Union team at home, even without Pipa, I think that's a very bad sign. as far as playoff hopes go. If you want to be a playoff team, this game, at least Saturday, is one that you have to be able to win. I think they're capable of it. I'm going to say on Saturday that they take a 2-1 win. Going on the road, again, it's kind of up in the air. I don't know if Bedoya will be back. We don't know exactly how Philly will handle player rotation. What we do know is that they're not really deep. They have a lot of games in a short period of time. And I know it's hard to win on the road. I don't know if Columbus has that in them, especially if we don't know whether Higuain's going to be back for Wednesday, what his status is going to be moving forward. Columbus cannot seem to figure out a way to get draws on the road. I think if you could get some draws on the road, it would really change the season.
I think they only have one draw
across
all competitions all year.
It's crazy. I know it's hard to win on the road, but you got to be able to get some points there. I'll go 1-1 draw on the road in Philly on Wednesday. So that's me being really positive about things.
So 2-1 win at home and then 1-1 draw.
Yeah, 4 out of a possible 6 points.
That I think they would be very, very, very happy with that.
I think so.
I would say you need at least 3 points coming out of this. I almost said 2. I feel like 2 would even be acceptable, I guess, manageable. But, you know, if you get 1 point or no points, then big question marks. Because August ahead is going to be a very, very tough schedule. And they need to win some of these matches coming up here soon, specifically against Philly, because, you know, they're knocking on the doorstep of Columbus. So it's really important that Columbus doesn't let them rise up. All right, so for my prediction, I'm going Columbus at home 1-1. I think that just how these teams line up, I don't think it favors Columbus very well. And I think that Columbus is going to have a hard time getting quality chances. Philly doesn't let up a lot of chances defensively. And then Philly has, you know, decent players to attack on the counter, which is a big, big question mark for Columbus. So I'm saying 1-1 at home. And then in Philly, I'm going 2-1 for Philly. So I have 1 point out of a possible 6.
I guess that stands with you picking Columbus to miss the playoffs. So I think that's that fits in. At least you're staying consistent.
I guess so. I don't want to. but, you know, at this moment, they haven't totally convinced me that, you know, they are a team that's a shoo-in for the playoffs. And I just really don't like this lineup, matchup, rather, against Philadelphia. I don't think that it suits Columbus well, and I think that they may struggle to create and capitalize on chances. But gosh darn it, I hope they prove me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. I'm looking at the schedule ahead after this one. If you said you'd feel okay about 2 points, I think you have to get at least 3, or you're going to be in bad shape, because this schedule the rest of the way is not easy at all. They have to turn around and go on the road to RSL, who's been playing well the last few games. Then on the road at San Jose, who's been playing better. Then you get Chicago, on the road at Orlando, who I think is on the downslide, but it's still a road game. I mean, you look at the schedule, and I'm not sure where the wins come from the rest of the way, other than you have back-to-back home games against Red Bulls, who may or may not be playing all that well, and DC United, which should be a win. But all these other games you look at and you feel like it's possible that you walk away with no points. So key games this week against Philly, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. So slight deviation. And for those that only care about Columbus, turn this off, whatever. But I have to ask you about RSL for a quick moment, because – what is going on, right? They just beat Portland 4-1 in a game that ended with 19 players on the field. And then a few weeks ago, they beat LA Galaxy 6-2. This is an RSL team led by our Lord and Savior Mike Pecky. But they've been bottom feeders all year, and then they scored 10 goals in two matches. What is going on?
I heard about Wednesday's game. I did not watch it, so I don't know exactly what went down there. I know I talked about earlier in the year, that's a team that was just absolutely crucified by injuries. I think they're starting to get healthy now. Some of the younger guys now have more experience under their belt. I don't think they're a team that's going to make a run into the playoffs, but they look like a team that could ruin a couple seasons along the way, that's for sure. And I think it says a lot about where Portland's at right now, what happened on Wednesday. I don't know where they're at right now. They're struggling. They've got some issues. Obviously, they're missing Nagby. They've had all sorts of injuries on the back line. So, but man, RSL, I guess after that first half of the season, or a little bit less than that, I guess if you're an RSL fan, you're loving what you're seeing right now, because I don't know that there's really a whole lot to play for. Look, we've seen crazier things in this league. We've seen teams put together insane second half runs. We saw it last year. So what I'm saying is RSL will be lifting the MLS Cup in a couple months.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. I wish. Oh, Mike Pecky. But yeah, go back, watch the highlights from that RSL match against Portland. It was quite interesting. There are three red cards in the matter of 2 minutes. I won't spoil anything for you other than Adi's an animal. All right. Well, Josh, thanks for joining me this week. Sorry, Chris, you couldn't make it. If you're listening to this, we miss you dearly. Hopefully we can get a trio going again at some point. But thank you to Josh. Thank you to Land Grant Brewing Company and Old North Arcade for sponsoring us. Once again, somehow we've kept you on for this long. And go Columbus. Pull out these wins against Philly. And you can check out our main pod early next week, Monday or Tuesday. They may be doing a little bit of a second preview and a recap of the first match against Philadelphia, so they kind of split you in between. So check them out. Like us on Twitter, tweet us, send us messages, hate mail, whatever. For now, goodbye.